This evening's reading is in Genesis 29. It's Genesis 29, verses 13 through 30. And it came to pass, when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him, embraced him, kissed him, and brought him to his house. And he told Laban all these things. And Laban said unto him, Surely thou art my bone and my flesh. And he abode with him for the space of a month. And Laban said unto Jacob, Because thou art my brother, shouldst not thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wages be? And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. And Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years, for Rachel, thy younger daughter. And Laban said, It is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days for the love he had to her. And Jacob said to Laban, Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled that I go in unto her. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah his daughter and brought her to him, and he went in unto her. And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpah his maid for a handmaid. And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah, and he said to Laban, What is this that thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me? And Laban said, It must not be so done in our country, to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give thee this also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. And Jacob did so, and fulfilled her week, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. And Laban gave to Rachel his daughter Bilhah, his handmaid, to be her maid. And when he went out, when he went also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served him yet another 7 years. That's Genesis 29, verses 13 through 30.
This text is especially interesting to me for a lot of reasons. We're going to be studying from a number of chapters in the book of Genesis, but I want to talk in particular to those of you who are not married at first. Suppose that it is your plight or your privilege to meet somebody and you're just head over heels, as we use that expression, in love with them. And then you make arrangements to be married to that individual, only to find that the morning after your wedding night, you married somebody else. Do you suppose that would be slightly disappointing to you, to say the least? Well, that's what we find concerning Leah. Now, the history of Jacob goes back some distance, at least that we want to discuss, back into the 25th chapter of the book of Genesis. You'll notice in chapter 25 how that Jacob had swindled his brother Esau out of his birthright. You remember how that Esau came in and was hungry and was about to faint, as he expresses it. And his brother Jacob had made a bowl of soup, as it were, a mess of pottage. And he sold, Esau did, his birthright for a bowl of soup. And then later we read in Genesis chapter 27 how that Jacob had deceived his father Isaac into giving him the blessing that was to go to his older brother Esau. Now these two incidences between Jacob and Esau, to say the least, did not make Esau feel very kindly toward Jacob. To say the least, he didn't feel very kindly. In fact, Esau wanted to kill his brother Jacob. When we read in the text of Rebekah, Jacob and Esau's mother, when she found out of Esau's plan to kill Jacob, She determined that it would be a good thing if she sent Jacob, her son, to the city of Haran, where her brother lived, Laban, in order that he might find a wife there. So Jacob was sent away. Now, this distance was about 450 miles. So this would make Jacob feel somewhat, at least, at ease from the wrath of his brother, Esau. Thank you, Richard. But that gives us a little bit of background on Jacob and Esau. But what we learn further, as Jacob travels toward the land where Laban, Rebekah's brother, lived, we find that he arrived in the general vicinity of the city. And this takes us over to Genesis chapter 29. And in Genesis chapter 29, when he arrived in the general vicinity of Haran, where Laban lived, he spotted a well and stopped to rest at the well. There were some shepherds sitting around the well, and so a conversation begins between them and Jacob. Jacob asked them, "My brethren, whence are ye?" Now, we wouldn't say it like that. We would simply say, "Where are you from?" So Jacob is interested in knowing where these folks are from. And they said, "We are of Haran." And he asked them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they responded, "We know him." And Jacob asked, "Is it well with him?" And they began to tell him that it is well, in verse 6, "And behold, Rachel, his daughter, cometh with the sheep." So we find that these shepherds are out and are about to water their sheep, and Rachel comes with some sheep to be watered. And we look at verse 9 at this point, and it says, "While he was yet speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth." Now, I want you to observe in verse 2 that the stone upon the well's mouth was great. Sometimes it took more than one person to move the stone. But we find in this text that Jacob removes the stone. Now, young fellows, you can just see yourself doing that, can't you? A beautiful young lady, and you want to impress her, so you grab hold of the stone, and by yourself you remove the stone. And so does Jacob, and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. In verse 11 it says, "And Jacob kissed Rachel, and lifted up his voice, and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother, and was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father." Now that's the meeting of Rachel and Jacob. But the text goes on in verse 13 through the next few verses to tell us about the relationship that develops between Jacob and Rachel. In verse 13 it says, "And it came to pass, when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. And he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, Surely thou art my bone and my flesh. And he abode with him the space of a month. And Laban said unto Jacob, Because thou art my brother, shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall be thy wages? And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel." Now look carefully at verse 17. "And Leah's eyes were tender, but Rachel was beautiful and well favored." Now let's pause there in our study. In this text, I've titled the lesson, "Behold, it was Leah." We're going to look at that in just a moment. And see how disappointed that Jacob was at the girl he got to be his wife. This background information tells us a little bit about the relationship of Isaac, Jacob, and Esau. It tells us about Laban's meeting of Jacob. And it tells us how that Rachel is the love of Jacob's heart. In verse 18... once again, it tells us that Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, "I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter." And Laban said, "It is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me." And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had for her. Now, two things I want us to notice. One, I want us to see the love that Jacob expresses for Rachel. But I also want to see the contrast between Rachel and Leah. You'll see in verse 16 or verse 17, the text tells us that Leah's eyes were tender. Some translations tell us that Leah's eyes were weak. There was something about Leah's eyes, evidently, that really didn't appeal all that much to Jacob. But you'll notice in verse 17, it speaks concerning Rachel, that she was beautiful and well-favored. I want to ask those of you who are men in the audience, perhaps what was one of the first things that you noticed about the lady that you married? I want to suggest to you that perhaps one of the first things that you noticed, there may have been other elements, but one of the first things that you no doubt noticed was what she looks like. Perhaps that was an appealing thing to you. Somebody said, "I married the most beautiful woman on earth." Well, everybody wants to say that, because no one wants to say, "I married the ugliest woman on earth." But what we notice in this text was that Jacob noticed something distinctive about Rachel. He observed the way that she looked. She was beautiful and well-favored, and Jacob loved Rachel. Now that's further evidence down in the text a bit further. In verse 30, it tells us that he loved Rachel. But as we begin in verse 21, the text tells us, "And Jacob said unto Laban, Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her." Now observe carefully that Jacob has made the deal with Laban, Rachel's father, that "I will serve you for 7 years for that young daughter of yours. She's a beautiful woman. I want her to be my wife, and I'll serve you for 7 years." The deal was sealed between Jacob and Laban. Jacob has worked 7 years. He comes to Laban and he says, "I want my wife. I've served my time. My days are fulfilled. I've kept my end of the bargain. It's time now for you to give me my wife." And he says, "For my days are fulfilled that I may go in unto her." In verse 22, it tells us that Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Well, that's impressive to us because most young ladies in particular would like to have some feast associated with their marriage. Sometimes we call that a reception. Sometimes we call that a rehearsal dinner. But nonetheless, in this text, there was a great feast that Laban made in order that his daughter, Rachel, and Jacob might be married. And it tells us in verse 23, "It came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to him, and he went in unto her." Now there are all kinds of speculations as to how much knowledge Leah had about this arrangement, or whether or not she was in agreement to this arrangement, or perhaps whether or not she observed the custom and knew that this arrangement of her being placed into Jacob's tent would be first, that is, instead of Rachel. I don't know the answers to all of those questions. The Bible simply doesn't tell us. But what it does tell us is in verse 23, that it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah his daughter and brought her to him, and he went in unto her. And Laban gave Zilpah his handmaid to his daughter Leah for a handmaid. And it came to pass in the morning, behold, it was Leah. Now that would certainly be a disappointment, would it not? If you were expecting to be married to this beautiful young lady. Now, some have suggested that perhaps it was the custom during those days that a young lady would go into her husband for the wedding night and she would be wearing a veil, so it might not be possible for Jacob to have known which girl he was getting or that he wasn't getting Rachel. Well, again, that's speculation. But what we see in this instance is he got Leah instead of Rachel. He awaked in the morning, and behold, it was Leah. And so Jacob went out to now his father-in-law, and he says, "What is this thou hast done unto me?" Now how would you like to be Leah, young ladies, to know that here's your husband, and your husband is now complaining
to your father that he got you. Well, that wouldn't be a very good situation to be in, but that's where Leah was. What is this thou hast done to me? Did I not serve thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me? Jacob accuses Laban, and rightly so. You have deceived me. Now you remember a bit back, and we're going to have occasion to bring this up again perhaps, but you remember as we studied earlier in the book of Genesis, we talked about how that Jacob had deceived Esau. How that he had gotten Esau to sell him his birthright. And we've noted also how that in Genesis 27, that Jacob deceived his father into giving him Esau's birthright. The word Jacob simply means deceiver. Now who is it that has been deceived? Well, it's Jacob that's been deceived by Laban. Laban has been the greater deceiver than Jacob ever thought about being. And now Jacob has Leah instead of Rachel. Now, Leah knew that she was married to a man that did not love her. How would you like that, young ladies? To be married to a man that you knew did not love you. He loved somebody else. Somebody else was the love of his heart, not you. Well, in the text, as you'll drop on down into verse 30, it says, "And he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served him yet another 7 years. And Jehovah saw that Leah was hated, and he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bare a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, because Jehovah hath looked upon my affliction, for now my husband will love me." In verse 33, "And she conceived again and bare a son, and said, because Jehovah hath heard that I am hated, he also therefore given me this son also. And she conceived again and bare a son, and said, now this time will my husband be joined unto me, because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore was his name called Levi." Now we want to look at these verses. "Now my husband will love me." She said 3 times, "Jehovah hath heard that I am hated. Now this time will my husband be joined to me." She thought each step along the way when she had a child that finally her husband would have some affection for her. But Jacob didn't love her. Nothing that she could do would ever cause Jacob to express his affection to her. Now how would you, young ladies, like to spend a lifetime with somebody that you knew did not love you? That'd be kind of hard, wouldn't it? But that was the case of Leah. And that sets the stage for the things that we want to talk about. Even in the naming of her sons, we see stated that Leah was not loved. You'll notice the word Reuben meant see a son. To have a son in those days was especially a great thing, because the son would be the heir, be the one to carry on, as it were, the family name. She named her first son Reuben because she said, "Jehovah hath looked upon my affliction." The word affliction, the NIV, is not my favorite translation. But I want you to know that the NIV translates this word affliction, misery. God knew that Leah was miserable. She had married a man that obviously did not love her and had no qualms about making it clear that he loved somebody else. She named her second son Simeon. That is, hearing is what the name Simeon means. And she said, "Because Jehovah hath heard that I am hated." She understood that God has heard the things that I feel and that I've expressed. And then the word Levi simply means attachment or affection, some definitions give us. She said, "Now this time my husband will be joined to me. He will be attached to me. He will express some affection to me." But I want you to see what happened when the fourth son was born. In verse 35, it says, she conceived again and bare a son. And she said, "This time will I praise Jehovah. Therefore, she called his name Judah, and she left off barren. Judah simply means praise. We see the distinction in the meaning of these names, something that becomes a development, at least in the heart of Leah. What we learn is that when Reuben was born, when Simeon was born, and when Levi was born, Leah craved the love, the affection from her husband. But when Judah was born, her determination is to use her life to praise the Lord. It would seem that her desire for the affection of Jacob would never cease, but the fulfillment of that desire would never be. And so she accepts that. With the birth of Judah, her fourth son, she determines that she will use her life to serve and praise the Lord. Now you'll notice in verse 35 of chapter 29, it says that she left off barren. That doesn't mean that she didn't have any more children, but she had these four sons in rapid succession. We do note that Leah has three more children. One of them is named Issachar. Now, one of the things that we want to note about Issachar is that the birth of this child was the result of Rachel making a deal with Leah in order that her son Reuben might give her two mandrakes. We'll talk about that in a moment. But the deal that she makes is, you can sleep with Jacob tonight if I can have two mandrakes from your son Reuben. Now that wouldn't go over too good, needless to say. But the word Issachar means a man of hire. You'll notice in Genesis chapter 30 and in verse 18, Leah said, "Because or God hath given me my hire, because I gave my handmaid to my husband," and she called his name Issachar. You'll read up further in verse 16 the deal that Rachel has made with Leah. I told Donna that I kind of look forward to preaching this sermon tonight, but one of the things that I was a bit concerned about is getting all these names in the right place. So if I get confused, you bear with me, and I'll try to keep it straight. But we find also that Leah had another son. His name was Zebulun. You'll read about that in verse 20. And Zebulun simply means exalted. After the birth of Zebulun and the giving of his name, Leah takes the position, "Now will my husband dwell with me." The name Zebulun, meaning exalted, it was Leah's desire that her husband Jacob would give to her honor or would exalt her. And then she had a daughter whose name was Dinah. And we're not going to talk about Dinah very much, except that she was a daughter to Jacob and Leah. Her name simply means judgment or justice. That's another story in and of itself, for she was raped by Shechem, the son of Hamar, and she was avenged by her brothers Simeon and Levi, and you can read all about that in Genesis chapter 34 concerning the plot of Simeon and Levi and how that they avenged their sister. It's a good story. You might like to read it. But nonetheless, we read of the children that Leah gave unto Jacob. In Genesis chapter 33 and in verse 1, Genesis chapter 33 and in verse 1, again we see evidence of Jacob's partiality toward Rachel. You remember in the text that we've already studied in Genesis 25 and in Genesis chapter 27, how that Jacob had essentially stolen the birthright from Esau and the blessing from Esau. And we noted that Esau desired to kill Jacob. Now you would think that eventually down the pike, Jacob and Esau are going to come together, and so they do. We find that about 20 years down the pike, after both have children and have built up herds and flocks, Jacob learns that Esau is coming to see him. Now Jacob is afraid of Esau, and rightly so. The text tells us in verse 1 that Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, and with him 400 men. How would you like to look down and see your brother that you know you have not treated right, you have taken advantage of him, you know that in times past it's been his desire to kill you, and now you see him coming with 400 men. Jacob's desire is to prepare his family to meet Esau. And the text tells us that he divided the children unto Leah and unto Rachel and unto the two handmaids. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost. Now, if there's going to be a battle, who does Jacob want to be in the front of the pack? He wants the handmaids and their children to be in the front of the pack, so that if there's a battle, they'll be injured or killed first. Who does he put next? He puts Leah and her children next. Who does he put last? He puts Rachel and her children last. Now, what does that tell you if you were Leah? He loved Rachel more than Leah. Now, that's the position that Leah was in. Time and time again, Leah is reminded of the fact that Jacob doesn't love her. Now, that'd be hard to take, beloved. But as we think about Rachel, often in our Bible studies, we think of Jacob and Rachel as the ideal couple. And we think about the beauty of Rachel and hopefully the wonderful character that Rachel had. But I want to suggest to you that there were some qualities about Rachel that were not all that desirable. In fact, if you'll turn back to Genesis chapter 30, Genesis chapter 30, and begin reading there at verse 1. It says, "And when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister, and she said unto Jacob, Give me children, or else I die." You see, it's Rachel's attitude. You give me children or death. I'd rather die than not have any children. And so you see an attitude expressed here by Rachel that's not all that good. But you see Jacob's response to that attitude in verse 2. It says that Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel. And he said, "Am I in God's stead? Who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb?" Now Jacob is getting upset with Rachel. She is upset with him because she doesn't have any children. She seems to want to point the finger at him of blame. And Jacob says, "Why do you blame me? It's not my fault that you don't have children." Now that seems to be pretty typical of a lot of marriages. We've got to assign blame. Who's responsible for what does and what does not take place in the marriage relationship? And so it was here in Genesis chapter 30, and verses 1 and 2. We see that Rachel is very discontent. She's determined that she's going to have children. You'll notice in verse 3 of the text, it says, "And she said, Behold my maid, Bilhah. Go in unto her, that she may bear upon my knees, and also may obtain children by her. And she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife. And Jacob went in unto her, and Bilhah conceived and bare Jacob a son." You'll see in verse 6 that his son was called Dan through Bilhah. That expression means he judged. But we also see in this text that again, Rachel sends Bilhah in unto Jacob in order that she might have another son. And you'll see in verse 7 and 8 that Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, conceived again and bare Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, "With mighty wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister and have prevailed." And she called his name Naphtali. Again, you see attitude on behalf of Rachel. She names, or the name of this child named by Rachel, is Naphtali because I've been warring with my sister all these years and she's had children and I have not. And so she says that his name is Naphtali. Wrestling. In chapter 30, and in verses 14 and following, it says, "And Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field, and brought them unto his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, Give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes. And she said unto her, Is it a small matter that thou hast taken away my husband? And wouldest thou take away my son's mandrakes also? Leah knows the score. Rachel has taken her husband. And now her son, Reuben, some have suggested that perhaps he was just a little boy, about 4 years old, and he's following the laborers out in the field when they harvest the wheat. And he finds mandrakes. These were called love apples, and I'll let you do the study to find out what they were and what they were supposed to do. But we see that Rachel desires two of the mandrakes that Reuben has gathered. And in verse 15, the latter part, it says, And Rachel said, Therefore he shall lie with thee tonight for thy son's mandrakes. And Jacob came from the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him, and said, Thou must come in unto me, for I have surely hired thee with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. Now how would you like to pay a price to have your husband's affection expressed to you one night? Now you would look at that and say, that's not a good deal. That's not a good arrangement. But yet that's what Leah did. And we see that expressed on behalf of Rachel. The deal is proposed to Leah. Sell me your son's mandrakes for a night with my husband. Furthermore, we notice that eventually Rachel does have a child. Read down with me in verse 25 of Genesis chapter 30. Well, verse 24 beginning. It says, And she called his name Joseph, saying, Jehovah, add to me another son. Now you remember that names during these times meant something. She called her son Joseph. And to rather be content with having a child, she is still discontent. Though she has a son, her attitude is, Now God give me another son. She's not happy with having one. Now Joseph becomes a very prominent character, and that's beyond our study this evening. In fact, we see the longest narration of any character of the Old Testament told about Joseph. Much of the book of Genesis contains the story of Joseph. But his name is remarkably interesting. May he add, she wants another son, not just Joseph. There's another attribute that we want to see about Rachel, and that is seen in Genesis chapter 31. The context of this passage is seen in the intervening verses of chapter 30 and chapter 31, where Jacob does very well as he works for his father-in-law Laban. And there are plans that are made for Jacob and his family to leave Haran and to leave Jacob, or leave Laban. And in doing so, Rachel steals her father's idol. In Genesis chapter 31, and in verse 19, it says, Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel stole the teraphim that were her father's. Now this was especially important. To have these idols meant that you were the heir, or that you would receive the greatest portion of the inheritance. Even if that meant you were a son-in-law, not necessarily a son. But if you possess these idols, that was your assurance of the greater inheritance. Now Rachel is willing to steal those from her father so that she and Jacob can be the greatest heirs of her father, Laban, who, by the way, was very rich. We see then on behalf of Rachel that she's greedy. She wants more and more of the inheritance, even if it means taking it away from the rest of her family. We also note in Genesis chapter 31 that Laban knows that these have been stolen from him. And he believes that Jacob is privy to this. Jacob knew nothing about it. And when Laban came, Jacob said, Search through my things. You look for them. They're not here. We don't have them. Little did he know that Rachel had stolen them. Well, we see that Laban goes through all of Jacob's stuff. He goes through Leah's stuff. He goes through the handmaid's stuff. And then he goes through Rachel's stuff. But if you'll notice in verse 35. The text tells us between verse 33 and 35 that Rachel has taken the teraphim and hid it under the saddle upon which she sits on one of her camels. Now that's interesting to me because verse 35 says, she said to her father, "Let not my Lord be angry that I cannot rise up before thee, for the manner of women is upon me," and he searched but found not the teraphim. She said, because of the condition that I'm in, I can't get up out of the saddle. And so you can't look here. It wouldn't be appropriate to do that. But you've looked everywhere else and you've not found the teraphim. You've not found the idol. She deceived her father. She knew where it was. But she would not allow her father to search there. Now that's interesting to me because it tells us a great deal about the character of Rachel. Rachel wants another son. She's discontented. She's a thief. She's a deceiver. Now, Rachel eventually does have another son. Sometime down the pipe, we read, beginning in chapter 35 and in verse 16, the text tells us, "And they journeyed from Bethel, and there was still some distance to come to Ephrath. And Rachel travailed, and she had hard labor. And it came to pass, when she was in hard labor, that the midwife said unto her, Fear not, for now thou shalt have another son. And it came to pass, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin." Now let's pause there in the reading. We noted that names have a great significance. Rachel called this son Benoni, which means son of my sorrow. She knew she was in trouble. In her dying breath, she named her son. The text tells us that Jacob changed his name to Benjamin. That is, son of my right hand. Now you know why Joseph, and in particular Benjamin, were favorite sons to Jacob. They were the sons of the woman that he loved. That is, Rachel. You'll understand clearly why when the other sons came down to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph, as it turned out to be, that Jacob did not want young Benjamin to go down there. Because young Benjamin was the remaining son of Rachel, his favorite wife, the one that he loved. Now, as you look further in this text, in verse 19, it says, "And Rachel died and was buried in the way to Ephrath, the same is Bethlehem. And Jacob set up a pillar on her grave. The same is the pillar of Rachel's grave unto this day." Now that's especially interesting to me because Rachel, on the way, on the road, if you please, goes into childbirth, bears a child, dies, and she's buried alongside the road. Young ladies, how would you like that? Here is the apple of Jacob's eye. The young lady that he has loved so dear. And he buries her alongside the road as he's traveling. Now there's a bit of irony in all of this. You'll note that earlier in Genesis chapter 30 and verse 1, she said to Jacob, "Give me a child or else I die. Give me a child or death." And strangely enough, when her second child was born, she died. Now in this context, who is left? She left her husband, Jacob, to the sister that she despised, Leah. Now again, there's irony, I believe, in that. However, Jacob loved his wife, Rachel, even until the day of his death, at the ripe old age of 147 years old, when he called his sons together to bless them in Egypt. The text tells us that he still thought of Rachel. But yet, even though he had loved her so dear, her grave was alongside the road where they had traveled from Bethlehem to Jerusalem. Now you remember after the birth of Zebulun, Leah had said in chapter 30 and in verse 20, "God hath endowed me with good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me because I have borne him 6 sons. That word dwell means something. It means to honor. It's Leah's desire that Jacob, though he did not and would not love her, would come to give her honor. Now that's interesting to me as well. In Genesis chapter 49 and in verse 29, as we turn the pages over a bit, Genesis chapter 49 and in verse 29, it says that he charged them and said unto them, I am to be gathered unto my people. We see here that Jacob is an old man. He said, bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron, the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field from Ephraim to the Hittite for a possession of a burying place. And there they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. And there they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah. That strikes home, doesn't it? Here's Rachel, buried over beside the road between Bethlehem and Jerusalem. And where did he bury Leah? He buried her in the place of honor where his fathers and their wives were buried. Again, I believe that's a bit of irony found in this text. What do we learn from all of this? Well, Leah understood some things about commitment. She was a man's wife. And even though that man did not love her, she spent a lifetime with a man that did not love her. She was completely devoted to her husband. She blessed him with 6 sons and a daughter. And strangely enough, one of the sons that she had was named Levi. You recognize that name. The Levites were the priestly tribe among Israel. One of the sons that she had was named Judah. You recognize that name. It was through Judah that the Messiah came. And in Matthew chapter 1 and in Luke chapter 3, her son Judah is listed in the genealogy of the Lord. What else can we learn? We also learn that we can't have everything. Everything is not always rosy. We see that Rachel wanted children, but for a long time she was barren. We see that Leah wanted her husband's love and affection, but she never had it. Never had it. Rachel, it would seem, had everything. She was blessed with her husband's love. She was very beautiful, very comely. But she couldn't have children for a lot of years. Leah had children, but she had a broken heart. Another thing that we learn is that God sees those who have a broken heart. In Genesis chapter 29, verse 31 says that Jehovah saw that Leah was hated. In verse 32, because Jehovah hath looked upon my affliction. In verse 33, the text tells us that Jehovah hath heard that I am hated. Leah knew that though her husband did not love her, it did not go unnoticed by the Lord. The Lord knew of her misery. Another thing that we learn in this story is that contentment is a blessing. Read the bulletin article from this morning. Chris did a great job talking about how that contentment is learned and how valuable contentment is. But Rachel was not content. Even with the birth of a son, she named him Joseph, expressing her lack of contentment. She wanted another son. Leah's contentment caused her ultimately to praise God and ultimately to be honored. In Genesis chapter 30 and in verse 12, we see that Leah learned to be happy. Though she never enjoyed the love and the affection of her husband, she learned to be happy. The Apostle Paul, writing to Timothy, talks about the importance of contentment. You'll read that again in the bulletin article. But in 1 Timothy chapter 6, reading beginning in verse 6, but godliness with contentment is great gain. Leah learned through a period of time to be content, but she also learned what it is to be a godly woman. She learned to be happy. We also must learn contentment. We've been studying in the Hebrew letter in the 13th chapter. And we've learned that we need to be content because God will never leave us. He will never forsake us. Those Hebrews who were persecuted because of their faith needed to learn what it was to be content. Now again, we call our attention to Genesis chapter 29. It came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, "What is this thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me?" That expression, "behold, it was Leah," is a lesson in and of itself. As we learn about the differences between Leah and Rachel, there were some astounding differences that separated these two young ladies that seemed to continue with them throughout life. I think there are some lessons that we need to learn from these two ladies about commitment, about the relationship of marriage. The longevity is to be a lifetime relationship. There are many other lessons and certainly many questions that might be raised about this story of Leah and Rachel. But nonetheless, it's found in the Scriptures for a reason, to help us to learn some things that are very valuable to us. You've listened patiently. I hope that the lesson is profitable. It's certainly interesting to me to study about these two women. Perhaps I'm talking to one in the audience this evening who's not a Christian, and it would be your desire to become a Christian. You can do so tonight if you believe that Jesus is the Christ, that He is the Son of God, that He came, lived, and died in order that you might be saved. If it would be your desire to repent, to confess your faith, and to obey the gospel by being baptized into Christ, we can help you with that tonight. If you've done that and you've not lived faithfully, why not correct that? You have time and opportunity tonight to benefit from the shed blood of our Lord, that heaven might be your home. If you're subject to the invitation, make it known by coming to the front while we stand and sing this song.